Hello. My name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So, let us know if there are any topics you'd like covered or guests that we should reach out to for future episodes. If you haven't already done so, make sure that you are subscribed to NIMSY Insights, following NIMSY Insights on LinkedIn, X, Facebook. We've actually got some fun stuff over on our Instagram too. There are a number of different ways that you can stay up to date with industry trends and industry research. A quick plug here for an upcoming event that we're really looking forward to. It's going to be great. It's with Yurik, my colleague. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name. But on March 11th, 9 o'clock a.m. PST is when that's going to happen. There's already over 350 people signed up for it. We're talking about large language model solutions and how to use them. And this is a really good, yes, people are still talking about large language models. It's a really good, it's still very relevant because there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of hype going around out there. So it's a good opportunity to hear from the experts here at NIMSY. We've taken the time to review what's real, what's hype, and kind of let you cut through some of that craziness that you keep seeing out there on LinkedIn. Also, check your mailboxes. There is a new edition, and check your virtual mailboxes if you're a digital subscriber. Check your real mailboxes if you are a print subscriber. There's a new issue of Multilingual Magazine out there. I love this issue because it is the influencer issue. And what does that mean? That means that we are taking a look at a lot of industry influencers. We're ranking people that are have had a profound effect on the industry. This was a result of you guys out there in the industry. You voted, you nominated people, you voted, and the results are in. So make sure to check that out over at multilingual.com. You can find out how to become a subscriber and how to get your hands on that. Lastly, another great way to stay up to date on industry trends is the Localization Today podcast. This is published as well by Multilingual Media, and it is just a great daily update, very short, digestible tidbits about the industry. If you're not a reader, if you don't like to go over to multilingual.com and check out the daily news that they're publishing about the industry there, then you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you get your podcasts. So that's it for my plugs for today. Let's get right into the topic today. Today, we're talking about growth. We are talking about how LSPs can build out their sales function and get over that hump that so many LSPs experience in their growth trajectory. Here at NIMSY Insights, we work with a lot of LSPs. We advise them on growth strategy, help them build out sales teams, all of that good stuff. This is how I met our guest today, working on one of those projects. And it's a pretty common thing. LSPs, they get to that 5 to 10 million mark, maybe a little bit over 10 million, and stagnate. They can't get over that growth hump. And today we're going to be talking about how to get over that growth hump, maybe hiring and onboarding your first sales function. And with that, to talk about that, I could talk about it, but you shouldn't listen to anything that I have to say. So we brought on a guest, my friend and colleague, Karina Kvovik.
Well
Kvovik
done.
Is...
Kvovik.
Did I do good?
Well done, Tucker.
Did I do good?
You did well.
All right. So today we have Karina Kvovik, an accomplished sales leader renowned for architecting high-performance teams across prominent translation providers. And we're going to be demystifying building revenue engines. Karina shares field-tested tips during fledgling language services companies from fragmented founder-led sales organizations to scalable specialized teams delivering repeatable results. That's my introduction for you. Karna, welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Thank you. Tucker, good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you. So talk to me. I know about your background a little bit, at least, and we've gotten the pleasure of working together, which is super cool. But for the audience, tell us about, you know, what is your background? How long have you been in the language services industry? What have you been doing?
I've been here for over 25 years. We don't really want to talk about that, but anyway. So
yeah, we don't need to date ourselves.
I think I just did anyway. But I have been involved in localization, both on the client side and on the vendor side, and peripherally as well, so on the technology side, for these last 25 years. I have, on the client side, I was doing international product management, so kind of managing products that needed to be localized and then sent out into the world for customers to use, and dealing then with vendors, obviously, in that role. And then after that, I moved over on the vendor side and have been in sales and marketing since then. Building up teams, building up companies. So sort of a little bit of a serial entrepreneur. Have a smaller boutique company for a while, specifically localization here in the Northeast, but we obviously had customers all over the world. And then more on the technology side in localization. So that's kind of my background. So what I do, what I enjoy doing is building sales teams, sales teams that work in conjunction with marketing teams, because that's where the biggest effect is. So that's what I do. That's what I enjoy.
Yeah. And it's a good place to be. It's a good skill set to have right now. Like I said, we work with a lot of different companies, client side and vendor side here. But the number one challenge that when people ask me, what is the number one challenge companies are facing? And because, you know, at NIMSY Insights, we do all of that research and stuff, and we've been around for about 7 years. And my answer hasn't changed in 7 years. And in a word, it's growth.
Yeah.
LSPs come to NIMSY Insights because they want to grow. And we have some services and products that we offer to help with that, you know, trainings and consulting engagements and sales building and all of that stuff. But so different companies need different things, but they all want to grow. And like I said in the short introduction, it's a pretty common scenario where a company gets to 5 million. You know, usually it's within that, it's right around that $6-7 million. Right. Yep. Right. Like, I don't know why that, but you're smiling and nodding. Yeah. So
there are a couple of different levels. Right. So the first hump to get over is that $1 million mark. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're first starting out, then it seems to go up.
I just don't talk to those guys as much because I can't afford to work with NIMSY. Sorry. There's a lot of free resources on our websites, guys.
But, you know, but then there's the next step, which is like around between 2 and 3, you know, it's like the doubling part, right? And then the next one happens around, you know, 5 to 7. And it just stops. They can't sort of move forward from there and scale up. And it's a real problem and it's a real challenge.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? This is like the number one question, or one of the questions I wanted to ask you today. Why is that? Like, we can recognize, and it seems like we both agree, that these humps exist in LSP growth trajectory. But why do you think that is?
I think there are a number of contributing factors. I think that the right people are not necessarily hired. I think that there is a lack of process and a lack of training and technology that are provided to, you know, to the teams that you're hiring. And I also think that there's a lot of, at least in this industry, there's a lot of, well, you know, it's worked so far, why should we change it? Or why should we fix it? Or why should we try something different? It's almost, you know, like the, it ain't broken, why fix it?
Right.
But that also means that there's not a ton of innovation, right? That happens in, you know, sales methodology or the tools that are being used or, you know, how you're approaching things or various markets that you try to hit. You know, it's like, I'm really good at automotive, I'm gonna stick here. And because of that, there's a limited amount of customers that you're actually targeting, right?
Yeah.
So you know, it's not sort of, you know how they always say that there just isn't a silver bullet? There isn't. There is no silver bullet.
Yeah, and well, there's no silver bullet, but there's some things that these companies, so the number one question I wanted to ask is like, why do you think that happens, right? And I can give my input, which mirrors yours a lot, is, and I'm a business owner myself, like we founded MZ Insights seven years ago. And, you know, in those initial phases, it's like, yeah, I have a company, I have a business card, but really it's just me and my co-founder, right? And then you hire your first employees and then you grow and you get a big project and it goes from there. And one thing, and like I'm, you know, lucky enough to work with Renato Beninato, and he's the guy, he knows this ain't his first rodeo. And exactly, right? I feel the same way. And he, you know, was very clear, like, we need to hire salespeople, right? Like, from the very beginning. And I think for a lot of business owners, hiring that first salesperson is, it's a big step. People don't want to hire a salesperson. And frankly, they don't need to, because they grow quite fine up to a certain point. Usually the owner is the salesperson. They, you know, it doesn't say so on the business card, but they're the ones out there closing the deals. And hiring that first salesperson is a big step. Why do you think people are hesitant to hire that first salesperson? I've got my opinions, but I want to hear yours.
Because it costs money.
Okay.
Well, I think.
Next question. right?
Yes, of course. Of course. There's salespeople are not cheap.
And they're not.
When you're in that mode, you know, you try to get everything for cheap. I mean, I know it. I've been there, right? But it works, as you said, it works to a point where, you know, the owner, co-founder, founder, whatever it is, CEO, works as the salesperson for the company. Been there, done that several times. But there comes a point where it's not good for the growth of the company. For this to continue. So you kind of have to let go.
Yeah.
And then hiring that first person is expensive. It's daunting. We've never done this before. Or even if we have a couple of salespeople, you know, to start with, we're expanding the team and, you know, the cost, the you know, part on target earnings, you know, with the base salary, the commission, all of this, and then you have to involve marketing. It's just a cost, but people don't realize that investment is gonna pay off.
Well,
make money, you need to spend money, right?
Yeah, and it's a cost without a very clear, like, what am I getting for this cost? Like, if I hire a project manager, I'm getting project management. And like, there's a very clear need. I hire that person, the need goes away. And with salespeople, it's like, I'm going to hire this person. And, you know, most owners don't understand what salespeople do. They don't understand that the value, they don't fully understand the value that they bring. And so that creates a couple problems. A, it's like, I don't want to hire someone because I don't understand and appreciate the value that they bring. B, it's very challenging to hire and to manage a function that you don't understand yourself, right?
Correct.
So if I'm, you know, I'm a translator and I get a big project and I hire a couple other translators, now I have employees, right? I get another big project, I say, well, I'm going to incorporate, I'm going to start a company. That's how a lot of LSPs started, right? With a translator who got a big project and started hiring people. And I'm now a CEO founder, and I'm still a translator, right? And so I think like a translator. And it's hard for translators to understand and appreciate the value that salespeople bring, right?
Absolutely. Not just sales, but then, you know, add the complexity of marketing to that. And you definitely have marketing. A lack of understanding. Like, why would we possibly ever need marketing? We're doing so great the way that we're doing.
Yeah, marketing's a whole different.
Yeah.
What would you say? So if I have not, I'm a LSP. I haven't really invested in dedicated sales nor dedicated marketing. Where do I start? Do I start with marketing? Do I start with sales?
I would start with marketing, actually.
I would too. You know, if for no other reason, because it helps you create a brand, and it's going to make your sales team's job easier. Once you do hire those salespeople, like, they're going to be making calls, and they're going to say, hi, this is Tucker with Acme LSP Incorporated. And it changes that conversation from, who? Like, who are you with? To, Acme LSP. Issue. Right.
Yes, the biggest issue, if you're planning on hiring salespeople, sales executives, you know, whatever you're planning to hire them at, you know, in regards to cost, they should not be the ones that are picking up the phones and calling customers, as you said, and the responses.
Don't tell my salespeople that.
Well, there's an element of that, right? But if you're hiring someone with a base of 100K, that's not where you want them to spend their
you're
time,
wasting money,
right?
If they're cold
calling.
Right,
exactly. And this is one of those things that happens, and happens a lot, that there's been no pre-marketing, if we put it that way. So there's been no pre-marketing. Nothing has been put in play to actually create any kind of brand recognition. Then you go off and you hire a salesperson, and often I've found in our industry, there's a belief that you have to hire someone that knows localization. That is not my belief.
Okay.
I think that you have to hire someone that is really good at sales. You can teach them localization. You can't necessarily teach them sales, right? There's in my belief, right? This is my opinion.
Yeah.
So you hire someone, this person, you know, has been at another LSP, and they come expensive because the real heavy hitters do. And then you put them into this small organization, and they really got nothing because you haven't prepared. You haven't prepared properly to hire this person. This is the biggest, problem and the easiest one to rectify, if you just do it properly from the beginning.
Yep.
You know, make sure that you have clear objectives, so understand what your targets are. Make sure that there is a sales playbook for the person that comes. Make sure that there are tools, that there's training. You have a 30, 60, 90 day plan for these people, and also understand that they are not going to be hitting their revenue numbers, the target numbers, the first year. Well, you know, you have, sorry.
Yeah, say it again for the people in the back, right? Because I've worked with people, well, we want to grow, but we tried hiring sales once and it was a disaster and we wasted a lot of money. So I don't ever want to hire salespeople again. It's like, okay, well, tell me a little bit about that. Well, yeah, after 5 months, they hadn't closed a single deal.
Yeah.
Okay. How long were you expecting, right? Because you don't start on day one. The salesperson doesn't start on day one with a full pipeline ready to close deals. And the way that deals work in our industry, now different verticals have different sales cycles, right? But the way that it works is, you know, I say give it 9 months to start seeing actual closed revenue results. And up till that time, don't measure them by the revenue. Measure your salespeople by the activities that they're doing.
Absolutely.
Are they making the calls? Are they having the conversations? Yeah. But I've also heard up to 12 months. Like, give them 12 months.
It varies, right? So I kind of have a little bit of a gauge that I go by. So, but it's going to require that you actually have some data to base this on. Everything should be data driven, right? So if you look at what your average sales cycle is, and say that your average sales cycle is, 6 months, and localization, it is very long, but if this is for something that's outside of localization, it could obviously be shorter. And then you add 90 days to that. So your 90 days is kind of the ramp for a person, which is why I normally recommend to have a 30, 60, 90 day plan so that you know what the salesperson is doing. You can drive the activities, you can get them trained, you can do all of the things that you need to do in these 60 days and after, or 90 days. And after that, you kind of let them loose. But there's the additional sales cycle after that, right? So I kind of have, my expectations is for the first 3 months, there's nothing. There's nothing in revenue. If anything pops in, that's yoo-hoo, super. After that, I start kind of basically doing a percentage of their quota for each month. And up until I get to 100%, which depends on, again, what is the sales cycle over and the ramp time put together. Yeah. So, on a good day, I would say that hiring someone in localization sales, you're going to see 50 to 60% on a good day of their quota the first year.
Yep.
Right? But not more than that.
A lot of
leaders just don't think about this. They don't understand this. So, their expectation is that, their quota is 1 million.
Yep.
Starting day one, well, that's just not going to be. So if they get 600 grand this year, that's super. That's really good.
Yep.
You got to play it to be in for the long term.
Yep.
Right. But that obviously also means you got to hire the right people.
And before we go on to actually building and managing the sales team, I wanted to ask you, still on that topic of my first hire. So yeah. we agree, hire a marketing person first. And the great thing about marketing is it's not that expensive. It's not that big of a risk, right? You can find people offshore locations willing to work for a monthly salary that's very affordable. And so then you hire your first salesperson. Now, different schools of thought on this. Do I go in and hire a killer salesperson and pay them a lot of money? Because and one thing I know is what the best salespeople in the industry and in the world have in common is they know their worth. And that's one of the attributes, one of the characteristics that makes them a good salesperson. They know their worth and they're not going to work for cheap. So I can go out and hire a superstar and poach them from a competitor or something, or her from a competitor, or I can hire someone from outside the industry, or I can hire a junior level person, someone that I can pay very cheap, someone fresh out of college who maybe doesn't have that experience, and I can set them to work like booking calls. One strategy that I've used before is let's hire junior people. We don't expect them to close the deal and manage the whole pipeline, but they're going out there and they're booking calls with me. With Renato and bringing us in, right? What are your thoughts on this? Who's my first hire? How much of an investment do I make on that? Or do I hire, I've done this before too, or instead of hiring one senior salesperson, do I hire five junior people, right? This is a strategy that I've used quite a bit. You hire five people and 60, 90 days later, you have three of them. Maybe one of them quit, one of them sucked. And then you've got three rock stars.
Absolutely. I would, I'm not sure that one method is the solution. I would probably use a combination. I would not start with hiring the rock star. Okay. If this is my first hire, then I can tell you right off the bat, my organization is not ready for a rock star.
Yeah. And they're going to leave. They're going to get bored and leave. Rock stars want to make money.
Yes. And a good salesperson wants to make money.
Yeah.
All right.
I want my salespeople greedy and broke.
Right.
No, that's not true. I take that back. I want my salespeople. I don't want my salespeople broke. I want them rich. I want my salespeople to make more money than I do.
Absolutely.
Right? That because if they're making money, that means they're making me money. Right. And I see a lot of people get bitter about paying commissions to their salespeople. Right. Well, my salesperson's making more money than me. Good.
That's fantastic because that means that they're making money for the company. Yes. Right. Hiring is, it's such a tricky thing. But to go back to your question, the junior people that you call them, that's what I would call BDRs, right? Yeah. Business development reps. They're the dial for dollar of people.
These are the people that are clogging my LinkedIn messages every time I open it. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. So there's that used to be the way to go a few years ago. There's been a lot of a change over just in the last year, couple of years. In that, have a smaller team. Don't have a large team that does this. Have a smaller team. Have them very focused, right? Everything is all focus-based. So I would probably, in my order of doing things, I would start with marketing. After marketing, I would hire one, possibly two juniors, as in BDRs, mm-hmm. to kind of test the waters and to test the processes that you have, test the material. If not, then it's not going to be that expensive of a learning experience for you. Plus, you sort out all the kinks and then you hire someone. I am my organization. If this was me now, like pretend, right? I'm still not ready for that rock star. That rock star or those rock stars come in after I've been doing this for a little bit. I actually like to hire outside of the industry. Okay. And I like to hire hungry, right? So I'm not looking for the farmers. The farmers can stay on the account management side or do whatever. I'm looking for hunters, right? And there are only so many to go around. So if I'm looking at hire in the localization industry, hiring like a good one, I'm going to have to poach. And poaching is expensive and it's super risky, right? So I'd rather go off and find people that are really good at sales, that understand the kind of methodology that I want to sell by or use when, you know, for my organization, right? And it could be solution selling, consulting selling, Sandler, whatever it is that you want to use if you have a methodology, right? If you don't have one, I would suggest that you find one, that you look for one.
What I say is if you got one salesperson, it doesn't matter what methodology you use or they use, you know, it doesn't matter. But once you start building teams, then you need to have a common way of working. You need to have a common language that you speak.
I absolutely agree. Because
there's no best methodology. Just
no,
pick one.
No, there isn't. You know, I'm partial to solution selling. I'm partial to consulting
customer
or consultative,
customer
centric for sure, right? Because I think that fits the kind of customers that I'm used to working with. I like to solve problems, right? But you know, if you're looking to scale, if you're looking to grow and be able to scale what you're doing, you need to create things that are repeatable, right?
Yep.
And to create things that are repeatable, you need to have a lot of failures to start, right? You need to try things that are not working and realize that, you know, this just isn't working. Okay, scrap that and let's try something else.
Yep.
Because you're just not going to walk into it with all the answers because it depends on your own organization, you know, what the culture is, how you, you know, what are the products that you're selling. Now, if I'm only thinking localization industry, it still varies because, you know, what kind of tools do you have, what methodologies are you using, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, with one person, start small, you know, have one BDR and then match that BDR up with a sales executive or an AE or whatever you want to call them. Titles are really important. And then go from there and grow, but create something that is repeatable and then scalable.
Well, and Let's take this on. And by the way, guys, this is one of those crazy streams where it's like three times as many people are logging in today than who signed up for it. So if you're one of those people, if you have any questions, comments, go ahead and put them in chat. We'll bring them up. Share your experience or ask your questions and get Karina's point of view on things, and I'll bring those up on screen. But moving on to, so you've fired your sales team. You've, you know, letting them kind of figure things out. Your first salesperson, which tells me that you're an ops heavy company. Like you've grown, you got ops down, you got operations down. You're doing a good job. You're going through referrals organically, all of that stuff. So how does the ops team feel about sales? Like, because I've noticed before, there's always this, let's call it healthy conflict between operations and sales. And how do you mitigate that? How do you manage that when building your first sales organization?
Kind of forced them together, you know?
Yeah, lock them in a room. And yep. It's like having two kids, you know, you just, you know, tie their wrists together and say, yep, you know, until you can play nice.
They're not gonna get out of this room, yeah, you know, like this is so common, you know. Everyone thinks, oh, we're the only ones that are having this problem, but they're not, right? It is super common. The ops people always think that the salespeople are overstepping their boundaries and that they don't really know what they're talking about because, you know, they know everything behind the scenes. The salespeople always think that the ops people are too slow. And why do they have to have all the details on every single project? You know, like, why do I have to fill out these stupid forms? I'm just here to stop, right? Sound familiar?
And they're both right, is the thing.
Yes.
They're both right. Salespeople are too pushy. And ops people are too slow. So
yes, and that is the lay of the land. That is just how it is. So we got to learn to play in the same sandbox. And the way that I've overcome some of these issues in the past is by basically having KPIs or OKRs or whatever the hell you want to call them, but have goals that actually force these two parts of the company to work together. So you can have, you know, corporate goals that involve both groups. They're gonna have to come together. You know, like, what should our target customer look like?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, if sales goes off and defines this on their own,
our ideal customer is one with money.
Yes, right.
That's going to be the salesperson's ideal target customer. Yeah.
So instead, look at the data that we have. Look at the kinds of customers that ops have been dealing with. What are the characteristics? Talk to them, right? So once you actually start to create that communication, more of a natural communication, not necessarily the forced one that you're starting with, but the natural one, it's going to get a lot easier.
Yep.
And sales have so much to learn from ops because they can get better at selling in specific situations if they listen to mistakes, failures, successes that the ops team have had. And the ops team have a lot to learn from sales in understanding the kind of situations that they're in.
I can speak from an ops perspective, right? And I like to think that I have a pretty specialized background and way of approaching things because I'm an ops guy that has had the good fortune to have been exposed to sales a lot. Like one of my last positions before NIMSY was I worked on like the customer onboarding team. So I was the ops guy. I managed ops people. But I worked very closely with sales from all through the pipeline to help them close the deal, kind of like a solutions architect type role.
Yep.
And then helped onboard the client, all of that stuff, right? So I got exposed to sales then through NIMSY. I mean, if you own a company, you're a salesperson, right? So I'm in sales now, whether I like to admit it or not. So I have this background where I've seen both sides. And I still identify as an ops guy, but let's be real, I'm a salesperson too. So
yeah,
one of my passions is I love talking to ops teams. And I've developed a number of workshops around this. And I love teaching sales to ops teams. I don't call it sales. Because if I said, you know, I'm teaching you about sales, they would all run away like their hair's on fire. Because right. Oh, I don't want to be a dirty salesperson.
Exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. I'm not one of those guys. But I love teaching basic sales principles to operations team. And really teaching them how sales adds value. And so, like, you know, my book that I wrote, The General Theory of the Translation Company, one of, like, the overarching theses in it is there are three core functions of an LSP. There's project management, vendor management, and sales. And these are the core functions because these are the things that add value, right? They add value to the value chain. And a lot of questions or pushback that I get is, well, how does sales add value? Like, how does sales add value to the end customers? And it's like, you're laughing. But
yeah, sorry.
Maybe I'll turn it over to you. How does sales add value to the end customers?
Oh my God, sales help solve problems. Sales looks for the pain points. Understand the
and
pain points.
I include account management as a sales function, by the way.
It's absolutely. Right? Yes, totally. And this information is valuable. If you actually get to the point where you sign on a customer, the information that sales have is what will keep the customer there and make sure that there's, you know, repeat business from it. No one understands the customer like the salesperson to start with.
Yep.
Right. That doesn't mean that that responsibility doesn't change hands, right? Because it does. You know, the transfer will happen over to the ops team. But for the initial part, you know, the well-rounded salesperson should be making the customer a hero, right? It is not about us. And that's a really, really valuable lesson that I have learned over the years. It is not about us. I'm having a company right now. Let's say that, right? So it's not about us. It's not about the services that we provide. It's not about that we have the best project managers in the world. And, you know, we can do this and we can do that and we have tools. It is not about that. Like, put your ego on the shelf. And it's about the customer.
About the customer.
And good salespeople understand this. What is that you have? What is that animal that just crawled up?
The cat and the bird are going to war. I'm probably making people in the audience nervous.
I just saw it kind of looked like almost like a raccoon from the back, but it was cat. Yeah. Oh, there. Oh, awesome. So making the customer the hero in the story and not your company.
Yeah, right.
That is,
it's not about you.
Point.
It's about the customer.
No,
and this is what I tell project managers. And, you know, I like to, when I'm doing a workshop with project managers, what's your job? Oh, my job is to deliver on time. My job is to high quality translations. My job is to, no, your job is to make the client's life easier and to make your client look good to their boss.
Absolutely.
Two
make
things.
Make them the hero.
Make their job, make their life easier. Help them get a good night's sleep at night. You don't want your client lying awake at night wondering, you know, in fear, and help them get a promotion. Help them look good to their boss. That's it.
Exactly.
Now, the way that you do that is high quality on-time translations, but that's just one of the ways, right?
Yeah.
And if you're delivering high quality on-time translations, but the client's still losing sleep and the client still isn't looking good to their boss, then you're not doing your job.
Right, exactly. Then what's kind of like, what's the point? There's a lot of people out there that don't necessarily understand this, right? Yeah. So, and this is where, again, when we talk about building sales teams, those are the kinds of people that I want to hire. The people that truly understand who the hero in this story is. Who are we there to delight, right? Yep. Whose job do we need to make easier? Who do we need to make look good?
Yep.
That's the people that you're looking for. That's the people that I'm looking for. And I don't care, inside industry, outside industry, young ones, old ones, that it doesn't matter. It's the people that get it.
Yep.
That's what matters. And if you can do that, then you are creating a good organization.
Well, and some of the best salespeople I know, and I'll just use a specific example without naming names, but one of the, if not the best salesperson I know in the industry, like back before I had a more well-rounded view of sales, I was one of those prejudiced ops guys who just thought they were all slick-haired used car salesmen.
Yeah.
And it's like one of the best salespeople I've ever met in my life, and didn't understand some basic things about how localization got done. And I remember because he was, you know, I was having a conversation asking questions, you know, something about, you know, how to calculate a profit margin or something. Just didn't understand it. And I was appalled. I was like, my gosh, this is the person, like, he doesn't even understand this, but who cares? Right? Like, who cares? That's not his job. That's why if the salesperson could do my job, then they wouldn't need me. He'd be selling and he'd be delivering. And you know what I'm saying? And
right.
Also, there was a lot of things that I didn't understand too. Like, right. Well, salespeople need ops people and vice versa.
Absolutely. And that's okay. So the salesperson needs to understand how to do a gross margin calculation if it's important to their customer. Right. Or
they need to have the phone number of their favorite project manager who they can call and say, I need a profit margin calculation.
Exactly. Sure thing. Exactly. So that they know how they can, you know, what kind of price should we put on this? What makes sense? Right. One of those things that that I've also learned kind of the hard way. I have a lot of those lessons,
yeah,
which is
those
great.
Are the best
right?
ways to learn.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Is make friends with finance. You know,
yes.
if you're a sales leader, right? If you're a part of the C-suite, whatever, let the CFO be your best friend. They're amazing. A lot of times I'm speaking as we right now, we find them being a threat. That's scary. They come and they talk about numbers and I haven't hit my numbers and this and that numbers, but they are amazing at figuring out ways around things, like work together with them. If you haven't hit your numbers, okay, work together. What do we do?
Yeah.
Right? Form that bond. It's fantastic, and you learn a lot.
Yeah, I'm agree. Make friends with finance. Make friends with everybody, because you're gonna need to make friends with legal, because they're, you know, make friends with all of the people whose job it is to say no, and that's finance, that's legal, that's infosec and IT. Right?
Yeah,
because you're
going
to get the sweetheart deal on the table, and that contract's going to be ready to sign, and legal and IT and finance and HR, they're going to be the people that are going to be like, I can't sign this because of this clause, right?
Exactly.
Play nice.
Very, very true. Very true.
Well, and speaking of IT, let's go to technology. CRM, customer relationship management software. And I mean, my opinion is if you're selling, have a CRM.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, period, right?
Yeah.
What does it, but that can be scary for someone that's never implemented a CRM. Talk to us a little bit about you would advise a client that's never had a sales function, isn't using a CRM. What's the point? What's the value? How much does it cost? Go.
Oh, I don't know the cost of things because there are so
different,
many out there.
Different.
There are ones
like
that
the
are
one
free.
You want costs a lot of money. The one that is good enough is good enough.
Yeah. There are CRMs out there that are specifically for smaller organizations. There are CRMs that are for large, complex organizations. I've worked with both or several of them. But a CRM is a gold mine. It is the only thing that is going to make you be able to predict things into the future. Mm-hmm. It's the only thing where you can go in and actually look at your pipeline. What does it look like? How healthy is it? What is the, you know, lifetime value of a customer? What is our close ratio? What is our conversion ratio? Like all of these things, it's everything is so data driven that when you don't have the data, you really truly can't make proper decisions, right? But And a lot of times when we start, basically our CRM is an Excel spreadsheet.
And
or, you know, a sheet.
Better than nothing.
Absolutely. Certainly. And that's where we all start. No one is going to start a company and implement Salesforce the first thing that they do. It's just not going to happen, well, right?
I did, because my partner's Renato Beninato. Not Salesforce. Well, we couldn't afford Salesforce. But
no, exactly.
Yeah. CRM was literally like the first piece of technology that I got.
But most people, as you said, you know, there's a translator that got a big project that, you know, hired a few other translators, etc. Right? So gather data. I mean, what I can say about CRMs is that they're invaluable in looking backwards and looking forwards. Yep. They have all the data that you need. Super, super, super important. So if there's anything I can recommend to everyone that's listening is get a CRM. Like, you know, start small. Yep. You know, I have preferences, but I'm not here to sell anything, you know? So
to me, it's like, and I stole this from somebody else who stole it from somebody else, but I say it all the time, is the best tool for the job is the one that you know how to use, right?
Absolutely. It's
get a CRM, doesn't matter which one, right?
Yeah. Now, and it needs to be easy. Don't go complex.
Well, I'm using Zoho CRM, right?
Yeah.
Which was very affordable entry point for us.
For sure.
It's grown with us. And the reason I chose it, other than the affordability of it, was because it integrated with my other suites, my other tools that I use.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's some CRMs that integrate really well with Office 365. There's some that integrate really well with Google. There's some that, and we're using G Suite, Google Workplace.
This
was seamless integration. I tested a bunch of them, and that's the one that I chose.
Yeah. I've worked with HubSpot. I've worked with Zoho. I love HubSpot. Okay, so I said it.
Yeah. All right. There we go. Like, we'll go on record and say, I don't have a favorite CRM. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do.
Everyone has a favorite CRM, and it's always HubSpot. I'm sorry. It's just
so
sexy.
So great, you know, except for when you get them, you become a really large organization, right? Then it does have limits because it has the cost becomes a little bit too much because you basically have to pay for the number of contacts that you have.
Oh, tens of thousands of dollars a month.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen the bills before.
Yeah. So you want to be careful, right? You want to be careful. You want to be measured. But I mean, it also has a lot of tools that, you know, they have a marketplace just like Salesforce has the AppExchange. They have sequencing for salespeople. There's a lot of tools. And there are other tools that are easily integrated into the CRM, right? Yeah. You know, like some customer insight tools that are really good. There are the very expensive ones and there are the not so expensive ones. And, you know, all the AI stuff that's coming.
Oh, we lasted 48 minutes without talking about AI.
I think that's pretty good.
I can stop my stopwatch. I think that's a record. I think for the last 12 months, it's been about 20 minutes on average before we start talking about AI.
No, so there's a lot to be said there. There are a lot of tools. There are tools that don't work very well. There are tools that work really well. I think you have to take a look at, if we look at the sales side specifically, what creates efficiencies, creates automation.
Here's one thing they all have in common is your salespeople are going to complain about them.
Well, yes, of course.
So just because your salesperson's complaining about the CRM doesn't mean you need to change it.
Nope.
There's my piece of advice.
Salespeople always have a lot to say.
That's a very good way of putting that.
Right. That's a good thing, right? That's a good thing. But it doesn't mean, so here's another thing that I've learned. Just because someone says it doesn't mean that it's true.
That's right.
Right? Exactly. So be careful, you know, you listen to. I mean, listen to everyone, but, you know, make decisions that
boss.
Are yours.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we have a little bit of time left. I want to ask you about one more thing, because you mentioned it earlier. You said, you know, when you're onboarding a sales team, getting ready for all of that stuff, have a sales playbook. What is a sales playbook and why should I have one? Honest question, because I have a couple clients that are paying me money to write a sales playbook for them.
Oh,
so.
Okay. All right. Well, you should talk to me then, Tucker.
I can outsource this to you. I don't have to be writing it myself.
So a sales playbook, it's what you provide your salespeople with that contains information about the company, you know, strategic, vision, mission, all of that. It includes the products that you're selling or the services, you know, what are they, what's the value prop here. It contains objection handling, right? So you talk to a customer and they say, oh, this is way too expensive. What is your response? How do you get around that? It contains pricing, competitive information. Because anything that a salesperson could need when they actually have a meeting or a conversation with a customer, it needs to be at their fingertips. And this is something, it's a live document, right? It changes. If you have an existing sales team already, have them help writing it,
right?
Because they're going to know, right? They're going to know the objections that they're using. It's going to contain information about the tools that are using. And here's a good one. A sales playbook should include at least one or a couple of pages on terminology. And when I say terminology, I'm not talking about, you know, product terminology. I'm talking about terminology that's used inside of the sales team, or that's used to communicate between the sales team and the leadership team. So in, for instance, in sales, you have deals, right? And we have what's called deal stages. So that means that a salesperson has talked to someone and they've identified an opportunity as a potential deal. In a CRM system, and in general, even if it's just on a spreadsheet, you should have what's called deal stages. And that is where in the process of from start to close of a deal is this particular deal. And then you can assign actions towards that particular stage. But if you have a sales team that are not on the same page in regards to where they're defining their deals, right? So they, for instance, maybe there's a 70% stage, and some people define that as having had one demo in a conversation, whereas others define that as waiting for a contract to be signed. You as a sales leader are not going to have a clear view of your pipeline. Like you're not going to understand what it looks like. So if you have in your sales playbook a terminology definition of what this is that's important for the salesperson to know, that's a great spot to put it.
That's a really good answer. I need to go back and add some terminology sections to those playbooks I'm working on. I didn't think of that. That's a good one.
Hey, I'm cheap. Yeah. You can, you know.
I just get you on the podcast. You want to do another one? Podcast? We can work on these playbooks together.
Sure.
Well, we're getting up there in time. Closing thoughts, Karina, where can people find you? Why should they find you? Closing thoughts, words of wisdom.
You can find me on LinkedIn. I am doing some consulting these days, helping companies to do actually exactly what we were talking about, right? So how do you set up a team for growth? How do you write a playbook? What's the strategy, vision? How do you set up quotas? How do you set up, you know, compensation packages? You know, all of this kind of stuff. Like basically, how do you build a really well-functioning sales team? So you can find me on LinkedIn. You can also, I do have an email address, which is my first name dot my last name at growthimpact.ai. So you can find me there as well. And best of all, contact Tucker, as everyone knows who you are.
Yeah, and you will. How about this? Go put that. Put your contact information in the comments on the LinkedIn version of this. That way, anyone watching this recording can easily find it. And
sure,
KAARINA. You got to be careful saying my first name at growthimpact.com.
Yeah. So, no, it's actually KAARINA dot I'm going to make it complicated. Oh. KVAAVIK at rareimpact.ai.
There you go. All right. Karina, thank you so much for coming on. This has been fun. Always a pleasure to catch up with you. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Go Anytime. Ahead and take us out here. So, ladies, gentlemen, chat, we are out of time for today. If you enjoyed this NIMSY live experience, join us next time on March 11th. We have this actually isn't a NIMSY live. It's better than that. I'm going to refresh here. We have 351 attendees already signed up. March 11th, 9 o'clock a.m. Yurik's going to be talking to you about LLM solutions and how to use them. I appreciate our guest today, Karina. I appreciate my colleagues here at NIMSY Insights doing all the hard work so I can have these interesting conversations. I appreciate everyone in our industry who fills out our NIMSY surveys and schedules briefings with us. Hint, hint, the NIMSY 100 research is almost closed. So if you want your company featured in the NIMSY 100 annual market report this year, you better reach out to us. You can reach out to research@nimsy.com, reach out to me, just get a hold of us. Finally, I appreciate all of you guys in chat. Not a lot of activity in chat today, but I saw a lot of you peeking in there. I had a bunch of people joining us today. Really appreciate you joining us today, and I look forward to next time. Cheers.